on shortwave, satellite, and the internet, this is Media Network Plus.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome again to another edition of the program. It's really nice to have you with us. We begin today with an update on a story that we covered a number of weeks ago concerning Tonga. The increasingly strained relationship between the Tongan Prime Minister and the Tonga Broadcasting Commission appears to have come to a head with the dismissal of Nesia Fata, the commission's chief executive. The sacking is the culmination of weeks of tension during which the Prime Minister has been critical of what he sees as a failure by the state broadcaster to back government policies and the persistent line of tough questioning aimed at him and his officials. The decision to remove her as the chief executive, who began as a trainee reporter at TBC more than 30 years ago, comes on the eve of International Press Freedom Day. A former advisor to the Prime Minister, Mr. Mulola, says Nesia Fata may not be the last of the commissioner's senior staff to be shown the door. He speaks next to Bruce Hill.
There was a letter delivered from the Minister of Public Enterprises ordering that the general manager of the TBC be dismissed. General manager, of course, has been Manisefi Fita, and this has been an ongoing saga over the past 3 weeks or so between the government and the general manager. Rumors that she was going to be dismissed. Finally, it happened.
But my understanding is that her contract was actually renewed just a week ago.
It was renewed just a week ago after a committee from the board investigated the situation with their contract, and four lawyers had given advice to them that they should not dismiss her because it would be illegal. Apparently, what I found out is that the board have come up with new information, the fact that the public enterprise minister should have given approval to the renewal of the contract, as well as the Minister of Communication and Information. Apparently, this is all in her contract. But both ministers were not informed about the renewal, and so they went ahead and renewed it anyway.
How serious is this incident at the TBC in light of media freedom in Tonga? Because this has been a hot-button issue for some time. The Prime Minister has had a lot of complaints about the TBC, saying that it's anti-government in its reporting.
Well, the serious thing about it is that we're about to commemorate Media Freedom Day on Wednesday, and so they have chosen a bad time to do this. The other thing, too, that is of great concern to us is there are two senior journalists of Tonga Broadcasting. If they are able to do this to the general manager, they should be able to do this to the two senior journalists, which is Viola Ulakai as well as Lamanu Petelo, who have been under the threat of the government to be dismissed as well.
Why did the government say that it's dismissed Nanisefa Fita as CEO of TBC? What were their reasons?
They felt that after years of being the general manager, she has not produce what they call any results in the operation of the enterprise. And she hasn't been able to even control some of the kind of information. They've held her responsible for the kind of news information and attitude toward government that the journalists of TBC have.
Well, we have had the Prime Minister of Tonga, Akilisi Pohiva, on this program a few weeks ago talking about his concerns about the TBC. He said they were biased, they were anti-government, they keep asking a lot of tough questions, and he said that the role of a government broadcaster is to do what the government wants.
Well, that is a perspective that I believe is wrong. The public broadcasting is basically a role to serve the nation of Tonga, the people of Tonga. And whatever government is in power at that particular time, it doesn't mean that they end up controlling what goes out of Tonga Broadcasting Commission. Because a government here lasts for 4 years, they go out, another one comes in. And so TBC needs to maintain their independence, and they need to continue to focus on the kind of services for the people of Tonga rather than a service for the government in power.
Now, Tonga is not the only country in the Pacific that is having, well, issues with its national broadcaster. The Vanuatu government is demanding its national broadcaster, the VBTC, to do a better job in the future of raising its own revenue, claiming it can no longer subsidize the media organization. Eight senior staff, including the general manager, were given their redundancies last Friday after the government issued a soft loan worth 99 million Vatu, which is around 1.2 million Australian. Hilary Bula, the government's media spokesman, says VBTC, which has both a radio network and television station, have long struggled financially, receiving an annual grant from the government. More redundancies are expected this month. He speaks next to Catherine Grava.
The board wants to reduce the cost of the running of the VBTC because the VBTC is facing financial problem. We don't know what is the reason why the VBTC is not making the money. Each year, government has allocated a grant of over 40 million baht, and government cannot continue to subsidize the company. The main purpose of the semi-government organization is to make the profit, and the VBTC is one of the semi-government organization that is not making money. So that is why they have decided to cut down the number of staff. And for that reason, they have to go through the redundancy.
It's interesting what you say about it not making money, because VBTC, as far as I have understood, is a public broadcaster, which is funded by the government for things like staff salaries, etc., and the ongoing maintenance of transmitters for radio and TV, but not necessarily, obviously, to just be a mouthpiece of the government. That's the idea behind a public broadcaster. But it sounds like the government there in Vanuatu sees it very differently. Do you want it to be a profitable or media organisation, not necessarily just the voice of the people?
Yes, it is the voice of the people, but many of the government statutory body in Vanuatu, they have to stand on their own legs and make their own money and not depending very much on the government grant each year.
It's already a very crowded market, though, the media industry in Vanuatu. There's lots of commercial radio or several commercial radio stations, not necessarily really that big a population. Can it be sustainable for VBTC to exist and expect to be able to make advertising money in what is, as I said, a crowded market?
The advantage that the Vanuatu Broadcasting and Television Corporation has now is because they own national radio, also FM station, and also TV compared to the other media organization which they run only FM stations.
So are you saying the government is going to discontinue any financial support in coming years? It's expecting VBTC to be able to pay its own bills entirely?
Well, government will go ahead to allocate the VBTC each year with a grant, but on its part, VBTC has to make the money. And that is why the board has decided to cut down the number of staff and restructuring the program, and also the news, the content of the news. And because, you know, the survival of the media, like print media and audio, it is advertisement. And if you cannot make a good stories and a good program, well, the business cannot advertise.
But it's not all about just being a business. Obviously, giving information out to the people of Vanuatu, particularly in times of an emergency, is critical. And I know that the government there in Vanuatu has called on the ABC, wanting it to reinstate its shortwave service. It seems to be the pot calling the kettle black to some extent there, where the government is actually reducing its own support of its own national broadcaster.
Well, the problem why government has calling the ABC to not to see the shortwave transmitters, because some part of the Vanuatu they cannot receive Radio Vanuatu, and some of the island they listen mainly, for example, to Talk Pigeon service. If you talk to the people of Northwest Santo, they listen to the Talk Pigeon service, and that is why government has requested the ABC not to cut down these shortwave transmitters.
But isn't it fair for the Vanuatu government to be also supporting a public broadcaster that provides its own Vanuatu-focused information to the people of Vanuatu?
Well, since last year, government has, through the VBTC board and VBTC management, they have embarked on the transmitters in the whole island. It's over years now that the transmitters have not working, and that is why last year government has started to put priority to reestablish the network of the radio Vanuatu throughout the country, and some of the islands that they were not receiving radio Vanuatu, now they can receive radio very clear.
And of course, this is a story that we will be keeping our eye on. Let's now move to Samoa, where there's questions about media freedom. The editor of a Samoan newspaper is worried about media freedom after police searched the paper's premises looking for the identity of an online blogger. This actually followed the police action after a letter was published about a girl who showed signs and markings on her body that are similar to those suffered by Jesus Christ in the crucifixion. Matafa Kenyalasa told Sara Viatululu the police came after the girl's family complained and claimed the blogger's comment was defamatory and untrue.
They turned up with a search warrant. They wanted to find out the identity of a person who had written a letter about the stigmata saga in Samoa at the moment. It was run in the paper and they wanted to find out who it was.
Can you tell us a little bit about the stigmata, the background there?
This is a story about a girl who claims to be, of course, stigmata. And it's been an ongoing story. But the latest development has led to an online blogger making what they claim to be defamatory statements against the family and this girl. So the letter in question that was published in the Samoa Observer kind of made a claim in connection to what's been said online. So that's what the police came here for.
How does it impinge on freedom of speech?
Of course, you know, we're all about media freedom and freedom of expression, but that comes with responsibility. The matter when the police came, was handled, I would say, the Samoan way. It wasn't carried out like you'd expect a search warrant in other countries. We sat down, we talked. I told them we've got nothing to hide. It's an online comment. It's available online. The name of the person is online. But I think certainly it sets a very dangerous precedent for this country in terms of media freedom. I mean, what happens next is anybody who writes a letter or anything that they don't like, they don't go to the police and the police will turn up with a search warrant. And that to me is concerning.
So is it the end of the matter? I mean, did the police get anywhere or will they be back?
I'm not sure at this stage, to be quite honest with you. We gave them what we could and we said, like I said, the letter was an online response. And the name of the person is on, it's still, if you go on our website, it's still there. So, where they take it from here, I don't know. Whereas, for us, the Observer, obviously, we've handed it to our legal team and they're handling it now. So, we'll see where it goes.
So is this type of blogger common over there?
No, it's not. Obviously, we've got so many different bloggers. But whereas this one, the mystery of who the person is has become a real story on its own. And, the fact that the police have launched a full-blown investigation to find out who he is has, it's just dominated the headlines in Samoa lately. So it's definitely not common. It's interesting. Do I agree with it? The content of the blogs, to me, is very dangerous. It's very defamatory. And that's what worries me. So it's everything to do with media ethics, because this online blogger, in a country like Samoa where the understanding of the public about the role of the media is not well understood, I think people think that this is all part of the media. Well, this is a blogger, this is a faceless blogger, I think that shouldn't be taken very seriously. If you've got an opinion, you should put your name there and put your face there for people to take it seriously.
Now, something that we've actually heard, especially over the last few months, from Donald Trump, the President of the United States, is him going on and on about fake news. And, of course, he's targeting, the big news outlets like Reuters, CNN, and many others. Now, of course, websites and news organizations he doesn't consider fake news would be things like InfoWars, the website that was created by Alex Jones. Yes, Alex Jones, who appears now to be a performance artist, but that is a whole different thing altogether. Now, you may think this is a phenomenon that only exists in the United States or in Europe or in Australia, but no, actually, it exists in many other parts of the world. And one part of the world where fake news, or as it's called, duck news, that's D-U-C-K, is getting exploited is in Southeast Asia. Liam Cochrane reports next from Vietnam.
In Southeast Asia, the best translation for fake news has to be the one used by the Vietnamese, Tin Viet. Tin Viet literally means duck news. Okay, stay with me here. Vietnam was, of course, once a colony of France. The French word for duck, canard, is apparently slang for a hoax or a swindle, something to do with a 17th century joke involving someone half-selling a duck. No doubt it was hilarious at the time. But even now, when folks on the streets of Ho Chi Minh City speak of President Trump's latest swing at CNN or the New York Times, they talk of duck news, which probably rhymes with what the rest of us are saying about Fox. Media reports that are not true and are meant to mislead are nothing new. Propaganda is a core part of communist nations like Vietnam and Laos, and everywhere, really. But this idea of fake news that Donald Trump has popularized is really catching on across Southeast Asia. In Thailand, the best case study is the standoff at the Dhammagaya Temple, a brand of Buddhism that encourages supporters to get rich and inspires a cult following. For more than 3 weeks now, police have faced off with monks and lay people. The police want to speak to the founder of the temple over money laundering and embezzlement charges, but the 72-year-old robed runaway is on the lam. Now, you have to pity the police. This fellow, Dhammachayo, once claimed to have travelled on some kind of astral plane to meet the original Buddha, so it should be pretty easy for him to escape a few thousand police officers surrounding his sprawling temple complex. But just in case astral travel fails, the Dhammagaya sect has a sophisticated propaganda machine, with supporters flooding social media with their version of the facts. I'm regularly receiving emails from a supporter in Australia sharing videos from America and graphics produced in Thailand about why Dhammachayo is innocent.
What's happening today to our temple is an absolute desecration of our human rights.
The police are putting out similar explainers and have shut down Dhammagaya's TV station, trying to counter what they call fake news. Now, take a step back, and one could see the whole mad standoff that's dominated the front page for more than 3 weeks as the ultimate fake news story here in Thailand, whipped up to distract the public from the military junta's ongoing attacks against democracy and free speech. And hey, why should speech be free anyway? Here in the land of a thousand denials, the generals want to introduce a licensing system for journalists. Under draft legislation, a government-controlled committee would have the power to revoke a reporter's license, meaning self-censorship and silencing of critical voices would be almost guaranteed. Now, there's pushback against this dangerous idea, but given Prime Minister Prayut Chan-o-cha's volatile relationship with the media, anything's possible. General Prayut's counterpart in Cambodia, Hun Sen, is very familiar with fake news. For years, he's made sure his family members and cronies have owned all the major TV stations and most of the radio stations and newspapers too, resulting in great gushes of sycophantic coverage. I once met a Cambodian reporter who would go to a press conference and then race to the newspaper office aligned to the ruling party to file his pro-regime story, and then race to one of the few opposition-aligned newspapers to file a story attacking the government. He may not have been ethical, but he was smart. He got paid twice. Facebook has really changed things in Cambodia, and Hun Sen has rushed to adapt, posting somewhat awkward photos trying to counter the view that he's a dictator. One shot of him emerging from the ocean in a wet white singlet offered a rare but unsettling moment of transparency in Cambodia. When he's not threatening to kill his political opponents or lock up journalists, Hun Sen has revelled in the post-election chaos in the United States. On several occasions, he's defended a violent crackdown on a peaceful protest by pointing to American law enforcement and their well-televised heavy hand. No longer can the US preach rule of law to Hun Sen without expecting a sharp jab back. Now, I know what you're thinking. Hun Sen, Thailand's military junta, of course these guys are exploiting the fake news. What about Aung San Suu Kyi, the Nobel Prize winner, whose dignified defiance of the Burmese junta became a leading light of hope for the rest of the beaten-down nation? Well, head to the webpage kept by Aung San Suu Kyi's office, and what you'll find is quite disturbing. One press release responds to the repeated and credible allegations that the army is using systematic rape as a weapon of war against Muslim Rohingyas. These are graphic accounts of soldiers gang-raping Rohingyas, told to the UN, to human rights groups and to media by hundreds, if not thousands, of Rohingya women who fled to Bangladesh. Aung San Suu Kyi has no power over the military and has been silent on the issue, so we're left only with these official statements from her office to judge her position. One statement denies the accusations outright and is embossed with a big red stamp that says fake rape. Now, putting politics before human rights is one thing, but to crassly label the horrific assaults on women as fake rape has left many observers baffled as to the moral direction that that once leading light has taken. But at least in these confusing times, we can look to the United Nations for a bit of a steer, right? Well, that's a weird one too. This week, the UN Special Representative on Freedom of Opinion and Expression teamed up with some other organisations to put out a joint declaration on fake news. Now, UN statements can sometimes double as handy cures for insomnia, but it's worth quoting exactly what the UN has to say about fake news.
The human right to impart information and ideas is not limited to correct statements. The right also protects information and ideas that may shock, offend, and disturb. Prohibitions on disinformation may violate international human rights standards.
So the United Nations supports fake news? But wait, there's more.
At the same time, this does not justify the dissemination of knowingly or recklessly false statements by official or state actors.
So it's a basic right to disseminate fake news, but doing so recklessly is bad. Put another way, CNN, New York Times, good. Pretend publications churned out by Russian computer programs, bad, but sort of allowed. Thanks, UN. Thanks for the 5 pages of clarity. So where does that leave us, as readers, as audience members? Well, pretty much in the same place we've always been, really. If you want to stay informed, check that the source of that information is credible. And if it walks like a duck and talks like a duck, according to the Vietnamese, it's probably duck news.
And that, of course, was Liam Cochrane. And fake news, well, seems to be going everywhere. Yes, fake news. Funny how you can give as many facts as you want, but people still won't believe it. So I think we should come up with a new one. We can say the sky is purple and green and yellow, and they'll believe it, even though we show that it's blue at the moment. Well, not right now because it's a little bit overcast here in Taipei. But anyway, that is beside the point. You are listening to Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International.
The Spectrum Monitor is a monthly electronic magazine covering shortwave, amateur radio, scanning, satellites, Wi-Fi, and vintage radio, which is available for any device capable of opening a PDF file. The Spectrum Monitor also covers amateur radio satellites, maritime and military monitoring on shortwave, reviews of receivers, scanners, and software used for shortwave, and more. Annual subscriptions for 12 issues is only $24, with individual monthly issues available for $3 each. If you're already a subscriber, you can renew your subscription by clicking on the Sign Up for 2015 button. MasterCard, Visa, Discover, and PayPal are accepted. For more details, visit our website at www.thespectrummonitor.com.
Well, it's now time in the program to turn our attention to propagation, what's been happening, and what we can expect. And when Glenn Hauser sent us his piece this week, he says, it's a little longer than usual. I wonder why. Well, that's actually because he's including a lot more information this week about UHF. So, Glenn, over to you.
Keith from IPS in Australia, the global HF propagation forecast through May 6th. Normal at low and middle latitude bands, normal to fair at high latitudes. From Space Weather South Africa through May 6th, magnetic conditions quiet to unsettled. Shortwave fadeouts unlikely, MUF unstable. From Met Office UK through May 4th, solar activity very low, geomagnetic activity quiet. FK Jana in Prague says the geomagnetic field will be active to disturbed on May 5th, 6th, 17th, 18th, and 20th. Mostly quiet on May 7th. Quiet to active May 8th, 11th, 15th, 16th, and 19th. Quiet on May 9th, 10th, 12th, and 13th. Quiet to unsettled May 14th and 21st to 24th. SWPC in Boulder predicts G1 minor geomagnetic storms May 17th and 18th, increasing to G2 moderate storms May 19th and 20th, with A and K and the seas reaching a peak of 50 and 6. Lowest A's and K's of 5 and 2 on May 7th to 14th. Solar flux 75 until May 15th, climbing to 80 and a peak of 85 May 19th to 21st. RSGB says there are good reasons to hope for some sporadic E as we move into May, the start of the main sporadic E season. Check late morning and late afternoon. Keep an ear on 10-meter beacons from around 28150 to 28330. Then move higher as any opening develops into 6 meters, low-band TV, FM, and possibly 2 meters. Art Jackson suggests May 9th, 10th, and 11th should be best, perhaps sparked by meteor activity. The Eta Aquarid meteor shower itself peaks on May 6th. In the limited time here, I only mention extreme tropospheric ducting, but there are 8 lesser degrees of enhanced tropo still producing FM and TVDX shown on William Hepburn's maps, updated daily at www.dxinfocenter.com/tropo.html. This week along the west coast of Mexico through May 7th, off West Africa around Senegal to Cabo Verde all week, and all week at least through May 9th as follows: along the coast of Angola, along the Red Sea and Arabian Sea between Oman, Pakistan, and India, and across the Bay of Bengal from India to Myanmar. Also off Western Australia, May 7th and 8th.
Thanks a lot, Glenn. And with that, we've come to the end of this edition of Media Network Plus. If you want to contact us, our email address is very simple. It's M, that's, you know, the letter M, MNP at bcjmedia.com. Now, over the past couple of weeks, I've been telling you that we do have a new website coming, and it was supposed to come May 1st, but things have been a little bit hectic, and we are behind schedule on that. So it just means we'll need just a little bit more time, actually, which is good, which means we can make it really spectacular given the extra time. So we do have that coming very soon. But if you go to the website now, pcjmedia.com, you'll see the logo for PCJ. If you click on that, it will bring you to a program bank where you can listen to this program again, as well as all past editions of the program. Now, our email address, of course, mnp at pcjmedia.com. Let us know how you heard the show. If it was on satellite, DAB, shortwave, medium wave, or FM, or even through a phone app like Stitcher or online. So, until next time, friends, I'm Keith Pellon wishing you well. 73 and 88 to the ladies.